we talked about the rules, how different people approach the book of the Revelation with different rules. And depending on the rules you take, accept, it almost can, I could predict your view. Because the book of the Revelation, if it was not, let's put it this way. If the book of the Revelation had no other New Testament teaching, it would almost be impossible to interpret. So you bring a lot of the New Testament and Old Testament understanding behind it, okay? So here's the question for today. And for some reason, it's not moving, which is bad. So let me take it off and let's put it back on, which is very bad if it's not moving. It's very bad if it's not, if we're not getting it. You know, this is the sign of the beast, you know? I mean, it's like not working here. I mean, I'm getting it here, and I'm, okay, not charging, good.
Is that a literal sign or a symbolic?
I know, I think this is literal, okay? Okay, it says, okay, you know what's interesting? Because this has an extension cord. And these Apple cables are very sensitive to Brand X cables. You know, and I might have a Brand X cable here, you know. Okay, is there hope of Israel in the end time? Everyone wants to know. Well, not everyone wants to know, but if you lived in Israel, you would want to know. And if you're made, perhaps of Jewish descent, you would like to know. And if you're American, you would want to know because America has it's split in terms of politically how pro-Israel this nation should be, you know. And as a hotbed, I mean, you have the Iranian nuclear, pact that, you know, President Trump threw out, and then the Iranian economy's tanking and stuff like that. Then you got the Saudis and the Sunnis versus the Shiites, and it's very, very complicated, very, very complicated. This is the simple question, okay? And believe it or not, there's a lot of things in the book of the Revelation about this, but like all the other hot and interesting topics, you can't really figure it out unless you tell me what rules you're playing with, okay? So should our political agenda be generally pro-Israel? Now, believe a lot, like a lot of the questions, I'm not really going to answer this, okay? I'm just doing it as a teaser because this can get one fired or assassinated or liked or disliked in this nation, okay? Here's how it goes. There are four key passages in the Revelation. That's why you can't say, oh, it doesn't talk about anything about Israel. Not quite. Then you say, oh, then it's a no-brainer that Israel isn't. Not quite. Because the book of the Revelation is so highly symbolic. So let's look at these four key passages. Revelation 1:7. First one to put in your mind, and I'm going to read it. This is before all the difficult images come about. Behold, he is coming with the clouds, and every eye will see him, okay? Even those who pierced him. And all the tribes of the earth will wail on account of him. Even so, amen. I'm going to get my pointer. And I got high-powered pointers that can blast cataracts out of your eyes. Note. Even those who pierced him, who are they? And the tribes of the earth. So really interesting, in Revelation 7, you have two distinct groups already mentioned, that those who pierced him, it's taken from, believe it or not, we're going to get to this, the book of Zechariah, chapter 12, and all the tribes of the earth. Now, here's the thing. If you hold that there is a future for Israel, you're going to say that those who pierced him, they are different from the tribes of the earth. Two different groups. Tribes, those who pierced them, and then tribes of the earth. So that the writer is including both groups, but because one can logically say all the tribes of the earth could theoretically include the Jewish people, right? So by including that, he's making, saying, I want to make a distinction, even though it appears to be redundant. But it's this Jewish-Gentile separation in Scripture. If you hold that there's a future for Israel, you're going to make a dividing line between those who pierce them, which is clearly a reference to Jews, and the tribes of the earth. Now, if you don't hold to the future of Israel, you're going to say that they are equal. Okay? That maybe not equal, but that those who pierce them are absorbed in the tribes. You see? So I'm going to just tell you how different views will interpret these critical passages so that, you know, we'll have a diverse opinion here. Yes? Yeah, but not from the book of Zechariah. We will get it. I forgot your name again.
Buff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good question. Technically, the Romans, but not quite so. Zechariah will make it clear who these are. Yes. And your name is David? Yes, David. Oh, yes. Yes. It's not preconceptions.
The question is, how do you define those preconceptions if prior to interpreting?
Yeah. And so what we're going to do today, it's a great question, is we're going to look at the controversial passages in the book of the Revelation. So I'm just going to tell you what these four are. And then look at the other Bible passages that are outside of the Revelation to help you figure out, well, how do we set the rules? There has to be some logic to setting the rules, okay? So after the four passages, we'll look at four or five other passages outside the Revelation to help you decide which rules you want. But just to tell you, there are two ways to understand this, okay? And again, like Dave would say, it's the rules you bring in. We're going to have to figure out what those rules are and how you determine the rules. Okay? So I have to wait. Okay? Okay, let's go. A second passage is Revelation 7, 1 to 14. And I did my dissertation on this, and it wasn't any good. You know, it just had to be, you get tired. I just got to get it in, you know. I mean, it wasn't that good, you know. I just got to be honest, you know. But here it is. After this, I saw four angels standing at the four corners of the earth, holding back the four winds of the earth, that no wind might blow on earth or sea or against any tree. Now, I just wanted to just step back that this metaphorical, symbolic understanding is also blended with some, I don't know, perhaps clearer literal type. You know, like four corners, four winds. Are there literally only four directions? There's north, west, south, and east, but is there northwest? You know, I mean, you know, it's like, you know, it's, you know, you could talk all you want. But when they talk about tree and sea, that seems to be a little bit more literal. I think I could understand that, you know. It's a blend. And then do these earth and sea, do they actually represent it? They represent something else. It's just a whole difficult thing. Well, let's go on. Then I saw another angel ascending from the rising of the sun with the seal of the living God, and he called with a loud voice to the four angels who had been giving power to harm earth and sea, saying, do not harm the earth or the sea or the trees until we have sealed the servants of our God on their foreheads. Now, before I get into the next passage, I'm just going to tell you two of the broadest interpretations that are diametrically opposed to each other. That evangelicals hold. One group would say, aha, this is going to be actually, at the end of time, a literal judgment of God through his angels upon the earth. It's literal. We're actually going to see trees burnt up, seas becoming uninhabitable. And that's one. That's how that tends to more literal understanding. And then you have the more symbolic. It says, oh, no, we're actually not going to see trees and seas harmed because it's all metaphorical about God's sort of a general control over the world, but we're actually not going to see forest fires and polluted seas and things like that. So, but we'll get into this in a later. Here we're going to come in with the passage in Revelation 7 that is for us. Then I heard the number of the sealed, 144,000 sealed from every tribe of the sons of Israel. 12,000 from the tribe of Judah were sealed, 12 from Reuben, 12 from Gad, 12,000 from Asher, 12 from Naphtali, 12 from Manasseh, Simeon, you know, you just read it. It's got 12. It is a slightly kind of unusual list, okay? But it's there. And so the thing is, who are these people? Because if there was no mention of anything Jewish or anything, you know, related to Israel, you can make a case that, look, they're not there. They've all been absorbed by the church, the present-day church that we are part of. But because there are this, and this is the second unique inclusion, you got to deal with it because it's there. Now, what makes this tricky is the passage that follows immediately after. So if you have your Bible on a, you know, a paper Bible or a, you know, iPhone Bible or smartphone Bible or iPad Bible, the next passage is this. And after this, I looked and behold, a great multitude that no one could number from every nation, from every tribe and peoples and languages standing before the throne and the Lamb and before the Lamb. Now, this is the exact same problem we had in Revelation 1:7, where, is those who pierced them a subset of all the tribes of the earth? You see the whole thing? Because you have the same thing here. You see the 144,000, and then right after, you see everybody. You see? Now, if you hold to the future of Israel, you're going to say there is a separate group from the great multitude, which is clearly you and I, people from every tribe and tongue, you know? Difference. But if you are more into that there is no future of Israel because there's only one, how God operates, and that's through the unified interracial church of Jesus Christ, and no more future of Israel, you're going to see these two passages as this one is symbolic and this one is literal. Now, here's the problem. What rules are you playing with? The writer John is saying, well, I'm going to give you the first one symbolic and the second one literal. And even if you hold symbolic, everyone who holds it, that holds their degree of symbolism would agree that this is quite literal. How do you know that? And there lies the problem. Do you see it as two distinct, or do you see as two perspective, one symbolic and one literal? And there you have it, you see. It's very, very tricky. And as Dave said, we have to go back eventually to understand how you even get to the rule that you're bringing onto the book. Okay, because it's the close proximity of these two groups that can be problematic. Okay, someone had a question. And your name is?
I'm Dell.
Dell.
I have a general question.
Yes.
The book of Revelation is Jesus' revelation given by
Yes.
What was God's purpose in phrasing it in such a way that it was so to interpretation?
Okay. I'll tell you my age. I watched, you know, there used to be this TV commercial for Clairol hair coloring. And the phrase was, only her hairdresser knows. Clairol, I've done it. It's a $1.99 hair dye. But is it real? Only her hairdresser knows. No one knows. And partly, when you read, and maybe one day I will teach you Old Testament prophecy. If we went through the hundreds and hundreds of prophecies that Jesus fulfilled, some of them were quite literal. Some of them were not literal. Some of them were weird. And so he'd say, well, why does God do this? You know why? It's sort of like, I'll tell you some things. Some other things, you just got to trust me. That you won't know for sure what it is. And so it's this balance of, there are certain things that are literal, and some things like, well, you really don't know. Because I really think that when it comes to the end time, no one could say with quite certainty that this is exactly how it's going to come down. No, there is certain things that we are very certain of. But to say everything is, you know, to the letter, it's going to be hard, Del. So I don't know why God did this. Having studied a lot of Old Testament in New, and I used to teach Old Testament with a heavy emphasis on how the Old Testament is used in the New Testament, there must have been like 12 different ways that the Old Testament is being fulfilled by Christ. It's not like, oh, everything's literal. No, anyone who says that means you've never read it. You've never studied it before. It's that difficult, and it's the nature of prophecy that certain things are clear and certain things you just have to trust and will be revealed after the fact. Yes, Jim.
Outstanding. Okay, if you weren't here last week, you're going to be lost, okay? Because he defined how we arrive at how we think.
Oh, yeah. What numbers are you talking about? Oh, about how literal.
Yeah.
No, 70% symbolic or 70% literal?
70% literal.
Yeah. See, Jim is revealing his view. And Jim, God bless you, you know. I feel like I know you, that I could joke with you, you know. If you're from a literal, and the rule was 70% is literal, 30% is symbolic, you're going to read this, and this is where you start from. It's presumed literal until proven otherwise. You see? You see? And if you're symbolic, you're going to say, assume symbolic until proved otherwise. Okay, I don't want to bring politics in, but there's this big thing with Brent Kavanaugh now. Accusation, proved innocent until otherwise, proved guilty until otherwise. And there it is. There it is. The assumption you bring in and how you approach it. Do you assume it literal until it's proven otherwise, or do you prove it symbolic until it is proven otherwise? And again, as David said, we're going to have to go into other passages to find out exactly which one, because in the book of the Revelation, it make a world of difference. Yes? Yeah, that's literal, okay? Now, what we're going to do is we're going to talk a little about Jerusalem in a while, but we got to get through these rest of the passages, okay? So you see in Revelation 7, these 12 tribes, you assume it literal, like our brother Jim, okay? You're going to come to a certain conclusion. You assume it symbolic. There's nothing here that means it has to be because the book is so it's so symbolic. And so you're arguing from two different perspectives, you see. That makes it very difficult. Okay. So let's look at, we looked at this. Okay. We already did that. That's another, the last slide of Revelation 7. Revelation 14 is very interesting, 1 to 5. It is another passage in the third of the four. And let's just go to it. It's a shorter one. Then I looked, so it's two chapters later, and behold, on Mount Zion. Now, I want to talk about this literal thing. Zion is like, you know, where Jerusalem is, you know. Is Mount Zion literal? So you have people who are literal who say, oh, when Jesus comes, he's actually going to stand on Mount Zion. So he's actually going to return to Israel. Strange, people who don't hold it to Israel say, in a really weird, they said, Jesus can come anywhere. He can land in Palo Alto in his second coming. Because Mount Zion is symbolic. Now, I don't know if Jesus can come here. It's just too expensive to come to Palo Alto. I joke around, you know. I use humor to deflate very tense situations, but it is very expensive here, you know. And you know, he'd get in a traffic jam on 880, and he like everyone would lose, you know. So I look, behold, on Mount Zion. So is it literal? If it's told literal, Jesus is going to come to Mount Zion, and this is where, you know, your Book of Acts comes in. Oh, the way you see Jesus ascended is the same way he's coming down back, you know. Oh, is it the same place? You know, that's, and so what's interesting in Acts, that's more not a symbolic discussion. It's sort of I'm going to tell you point blank what's going to happen. So you have to take how the genre, we call it the genre of the literature, into account in how you interpret. So one of the great rules in Revelation, if you can get other clearer passages, they would be of a great help in your interpretation, because Revelation by itself is just too, it's too spooky, okay, to understand.
So,
yes. Oh, yes, Larry. He actually sets foot.
Mount Zion, but he would, it says he's standing on Mount Zion.
Yeah.
So he can easily walk over to Mount Zion.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
That's geographical.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's there. This, the conqueror has come, and Larry has talked about things that I will not talk about, rapture and stuff, you know. Larry must be a glutton for punishment in terms of understanding theological, like, landmines and stuff like that. But... if you hold it literal, you actually believe Jesus is going to land in Israel. He's touching down, you know. And then because that's literal, the 144,000 of the tribes must be literal. Now, again, if you want to play it fair, and the other interpretation, if the 144 are not literal but represent the whole church, the corresponding doctrine is that Jesus could come anywhere. Usually people think it is. That'd be pretty funky if it's like, oh, wow, there's 244,000, you know? No, it's usually that's the one. Okay, now let's look. No one could learn that song except who had been redeemed from the earth. Now, this is some, the song, there was a song revealed in Revelation 5. They're saying it's Revelation 5, you know? So this is, I can't even, you know, break the surface of the difficulty. Now, here's an interesting thing. So the Lamb is on Mount Zion, right? So he's landed, 144,000. So who are they? It is those who have not defiled themselves with women, for they are virgins. It is those who follow the Lamb wherever he goes. These have been redeemed from mankind as first fruits for God and the Lamb, and in their mouth no lie was found, for they are blameless. Okay, anyone who's married with kids, we are not the... Okay, if you're literal, we're not the 144,000. Okay, just not. Okay. They are virgins, and no lie was found in their mouth. Now, let me tell you how the views go. You tend toward literal, then you focus on the fact that these are the first fruits of God. They don't represent everybody, but they're like the best. Okay? The best. And in this sort of Old Testament timey symbolism, you have these 144,000. If you're going literal, not only are they from the tribes and they are distinct in number, but their behavior, they are virgins and no lie was found in their mouth. You would hold that that is true of these special group of people because they're first fruits. Yes. Looks like it. Looks like it. Looks like it. Looks like it.
It's okay, there's more.
There's more. I mean, it's a very interesting thing, you know? I mean, have not defiled themselves with women. They would be perceived, and that's a good question, an assumption, that they are men. And they... Well, I'll tell you, they're not Brett Kavanaugh, okay? I don't know why you are, yeah, because Brett Kavanaugh's married, so he has kids, you know, wherever you are. What's that? Yes, yes, whatever you hope, you know, yeah. So here it is. So again, if you take it literal, you're going to have to read the details in a literalness. And so it's 144,000. Oh, they're literally, they've never had sex with, you know, they've never had sex. And this is a interesting, like, they're really good people. They don't even lie. And because they're the first fruits of God in terms of this end time thing. Okay, so that's the literal. Okay, so that's... Now, if you hold that, no, there's no future of Israel, but it's just symbolic, this is how you play it. Oh, no. That they are virgins and no lie, it's metaphorical that they're good people. It's a hyperbole that they're good people. Or you'd say that, because of the justification of Christ, it is as if God sees us as righteous. Okay, that's why Reformed people, almost 95% of Reformed people, do not hold that there's a hope of Israel. Okay? And the other 5% reside at John MacArthur's church, Reformed people. There's a little joke there, okay? If you understand that, you know. But that was not symbolic. That was actually literal percentage I'm giving. So if you're don't hold the future of Israel, you're gonna take that this virgin and this no lie was found is not an exact interpretation, but that Christians have a better sexual ethic and a better, you know, verbal ethic, and that the first fruits represents everybody. See, because Jews are in the book of the Revelation. You can't get out of that one. Jewish reference. How you interpret it, you either have to explain them out because by default, they are in there. Okay? And so it's like, you got to, if you don't want them in there, you got to explain them out. And the best way to explain it out is by proximity, one symbolic. The great multitude is sort of the literal of the symbolic, and you'd say this is like, you know, oh, it's symbolic. Well, it has to be symbolic. If you hold that there's no hope for Israel, this has to be symbolic. You know, because no, then the Christians would have no one populating the earth after the first generation, because no one have, you know, there would be no children. You know, yes, Buff.
So this is a vision that John had, right?
Yes.
So if we look at other places in the scriptures about visions, you know, Peter's vision,
and
you know, some others in the Old Testament, are they largely literal? You know, kill and eat. You know, here's
kill and eat. Yeah. What's interesting is that the interpretation is given. Here's what I think. There are certain visions that you don't really know, and then certain visions where I think I know what it's talking about. Let's see. And there lies the difficulty of this. Which one is this one? Is one of these visions where, I figure it out. 1 and 1 equals 2. Or is it one of these, I don't even know what's going on here. And so if we went into, let's say, the vision of Daniel, I don't have time, but sometimes how you view the details of that vision will determine where you fall, because they're not really clear. So that's the best I could do, because we have so much to go, and we have 2 more questions. Yes?
Can you clarify what you mean by hope of Israel?
Hope of Israel. That at the end time, that that there will be a significant a number of Jews in Israel who will acknowledge Jesus Christ and come to faith to Jesus Christ. That there would be, and you may not say a whole conversion of the country, but a significant number within Israel who can convert. Okay. And that's what I mean, hope of Israel. So it's not like, you know, people in, you know, the United States or Florida or something like that, you know. It's people in Israel. It's national conversion. And so that's my big hope. So if you believe in the hope, you believe that there will be a significant portion of national conversion in the land of Israel. And now, if you don't hold to the hope, you'll say, well, there is no hope at all for a national conversion of Israel, because we've all been absorbed into, we're all the part of the great multitude from every tribe and tongue. You see? We're all part of that group. Okay, does that help understand? Okay, yes. Such an interesting question, because I talked to you last week. Didn't we chat last week?
Yes.
And your unique view that I will not share your unique view.
Yes,
yeah.
Now, my second question is this. You said last week we should not switch sides. We should be consistent using the rules.
Yes.
And yet from your examples now and last Saturday, it seems to me that it's so much easier to understand Revelation if we're wishy-washy about the rules.
Well, no. It may sound like that, because I want to keep my job and be friends to all people. But here's the thing. When I explain, I'm putting 2 different options out there, extremes. I'm trying to make it clear that if you're consistent, you're going to be this. And if you're going to be consistent, you're going to be this. You don't want to say, like, I could switch from side to side. You want to hold to a consistency. Either that there is a hope, and if there's a hope of Israel, you're going to hold Revelation 7, Revelation 1, Revelation 14, and later on Revelation 12 a certain way. And you can't really move back and forth. But if you hold that there's no hope, you're going to hold to the interpretation of these passages a certain way. And what I want to do conclude is that I am not sure. Let me put it another way. I have a certain view of the book of the Revelation. I am not 100% sure of this. 100% sure of my view. I'm 100% sure that Jesus Christ is the Son of God who died on the cross for my sins. That's 100% sure. I'm not going to tell you my percentage. Of course, when you have your view, you always want it more than 50, you know? You want to look smart on this, you know? So I'd say, I think my view is 65, you know? And then the other one who's got the, I think I'm 65. How can you be 65? I'm 65, you know? At this point, it's a matter of probability rather than certainty. Now, about America, it's very, very interesting. And there are people who would actually, you write, read on the internet that would say that Israel, that the U.S. is in the book of the Revelation because it's a symbolic book. It all depends. Here it is. Let's talk about it in terms of your views. Let's say you hold that there's no real historical prophecy in the book of the Revelation, so that there's no Jewish prophecy. Everyone's the, Gentile, all nations. And there's no really physical harming of the seas. It's just a metaphor of God's control. So you could say, is America in the book of the Revelation? They would say yes, because we're part of this bigger overall spirit of Antichrist thing. And we will talk about the spirit of Antichrist probably next week. Everyone wants to know who's 666. Okay. And they say, oh, America involves the spirit of the Antichrist by our military might, our propensity to the monetary, the dollar, And so we're in, not because of literal, and I saw a beast and it had USA on its back. You don't have that, okay? And I saw Columbus, someone from Rome come and land on the shore, But because of the spirit of Antichrist. If you held to that, you could greatly preach that USA represents in the worst aspects of our culture, because there are very good aspects of our culture. And its very worst aspects of the culture, the embodiment of the beast in Revelation 13. Okay? Now, if you're more literal, you're not looking at the spirit of Antichrist. You're looking at a person. Who is this person? Police lineup. Is it this one, this one, this one? And most people would say, because of that, it's not U.S., because of its connection to Rome, which we may talk about next week. But there may be a connection beyond Rome, and it might not be literally geographic. So, I hope I help you. I mean, partly is I understand the spirit of the times, and the spirit of what's happening at PBC, that there's more of a diversity of theological understanding here. And partly in this, I wanted to say that when it comes to this particular understanding of the book, it's not worth dividing over. It's just, you have your understanding and your desire, but you have to understand where the other group comes from. That it's not you're coming on, you're so bad, you're one of those, It's just, it's a very hard book. It's a very, very hard book. When it comes to Book of Romans, we should all be agreement upon that, When it comes to Book of the Revelation, it's just, this is kind of hairy like that. Okay, does someone else have a question? Yes.
Okay, if we're in the last times, in the age of grace, are there concrete things that you can see happening perhaps in the next year that solidify
I brought my thermos mug. It says New York Giants. They're 0-2 with no hope in sight. If they win the Super Bowl next year, hell has frozen over. Okay. It's like I don't. Here's the problem of, and you know, in private I'll tell you what my view is. In public I'll deny it. Whatever I say, you know. I mean, I'm like a New York Times op-ed person, you know. I'll tell you in private, but I won't tell you in public, you know. I was going to say, I was laughing at my own joke. Here's the thing. And you mentioned Hal Lindsey last week, right? You ushered the sacred name of Hal Lindsey. Okay, now Hal Lindsey had a lot of stuff like, oh, this could be Russia and stuff like that, USSR before. Now the thing is, you know, it could still be Putin, you know, stuff like that. But some of the things that he kind of like possibly can happen in the 80s, well, we're still alive, you know? And so here's the problem of predicting. We're still alive 30, 40 years ago. You know, we're still here. So it wasn't that person. See, and there lies one reason why there might be a pendulum away from the hope of Israel, that type of people, because in the 70s and 80s, there was so much writing about, oh, it's right, and this is this. And it didn't happen. Ah, the crying wolf. Ah, it's going to happen. And so there lies then, if you're going to say, oh, I hold to the hope of Israel, and I hold that the Antichrist is real. Okay, if you're going to be naming the person, I don't know if you ever heard about Harold Camping, that guy, you know, he was the predicting when Jesus come, and then he got a mistake. Oh, I was a mistake, you know, my calculator was busted. It's 7 years later. Oh, it's busted again. It's like, oh, now I'm sorry, I'm not going to say it anymore. And so, you know, you get a lot of egg on your face because you sort of made it. And so maybe, like for me, there's a group of people who would say, you know, I believe that there's actually going to be this, but I'm not going to spend my time pointing them out to you because I don't know. There's a great chance that, you know, Jesus might not come in another 100 years, you know? And so I'll tell you, like, names of scholars who hold the different views and how they approach it and how you want to approach it, you see. But if you'd say, are there signs that it might? Again, it depends how you read it. And so I'll tell you one. It's going to reveal that I'm kind of a futurist myself, but I'm going to use this passage. And my favorite Bible program is Bible Reader. And I'm going to find it here. So let's look. Revelation 8. Now, it makes it really weird how I view things. Let's look at Revelation 8, verse 7. So, again, we're going to look at it. Is it literal? Is it symbolic? Only her hairdresser knows. Here it goes. The first angel blew his trumpet. Now, these are trumpet judgments. These come later on. And there followed hail and fire mixed with blood. And these were thrown upon the earth. That seems symbolic to me, you know? It's really a Halloween type of thing. But look at this. A third of the earth was burned up, and a third of the trees were burned up, and a third of the grass was burned up. Then the... a third of... And all the green grass was burned up. Sorry. Because it's, you know... It's California, you know, you can't water your grass anymore. The second angel blew his trumpet, and something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea. And a third of the sea became blood, and a third of living creatures in the sea died. Okay, I just want to tell you something. We're kind of close to that now. Third angel... Great star fell, a torch, and a third of the rivers and the springs of water, and many people died because of the water, a third of fresh water. You know, here it is. You say, oh, it's symbolic, it'll never happen. Well, it seems really close now. Okay, you want to go fishing at San Francisco Bay and eat a fish out of that thing? I don't think you want to get a handful of water from Sacramento, the Delta, you know, drink it, you know? You want to go to China and drink anything that that, you know, flows in the water, you know? It's like, I don't think you want it. People don't have fresh water to drink. Now, here's the difficulty. The timetable of things and what people swore that it was symbolic because it will never happen. I read this, it's pretty close now. But it messes up with your timetable because this is trumpet judgments. You see, and it's supposed to come later on. See, the problem is, if you hold to a certain view, this only comes in the last 3.5 years. I'm seeing it now, or close to it now. Maybe technically it's just, instead of 33.3%, it's 29.8%. So we have another, you know, 0.5% to go. But we're heading that way. It's very, very interesting. And you could say, well, are there things that I see in the book of the Revelation? Yeah, I see plenty of things, but it messes with my timetable. But some of the descriptions, which in the past would say it'll never happen. It's right now, isn't it? And it's pushing to 100% where the seas die. This is even like little like microorganisms. I don't think microorganisms, you know. But I could see the big fish dying, and I could see big kill-off in the world seas. I could see it. Now, I'm an end-time fanatic, you know. I said, look, it's just the way it is, you know. So there is a possibility that some of the things that were said, you're already beginning to see some of the beginnings of it. It's toys with, but on that chapter, an angel throws something down. Well, you know, it's the way the Bible wrote. Sometimes God throws something, but he works through man and stuff like that, you know. It's you throwing compostable products in landfill, you know, that's what's causing it, you know. And so it's very interesting. Some of the things in the book of the Revelation, which you would think are symbolic, you actually look at some of the details, I don't know, it looks like it's happening right now. We're in the process. And so kind of reveals a little bit about what I hope. But let's continue. The fourth passage is in the book of Revelation, chapter 12. And we referred to this last week. A great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and with the moon on under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. And she was pregnant and was crying out in birth pangs and agony of giving birth. So let's go a little bit more. And another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great red dragon, 7 heads and 10 horns on his head, 7 diadems. His tail swept down a third of the stars of heaven and cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth so that when she bore her child, she might devour it. He might devour it. She gave birth to a male child, one who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. But her child was caught up to God, to his throne. Now, almost everybody holds that this is going back in time to when Jesus was born in a manger. So that this male child who has ruled the nations is Jesus, and he's caught up to his throne. It's his ascension. And the passage before it, this red dragon with 7 heads who want to devour, it is Satan himself. Now, it's a metaphor, but it's not, you know, it's pretty easy to figure this one out, okay? Now, here's the thing. Jesus, or this male child, is caught up to his throne. Here is the passage that is controversial. The passage right after. And the woman. First question is, who in the world is the woman? The woman was the one at the beginning of the chapter who has the 12 stars who gives birth to this male child. Okay. Flees into the wilderness. What are you talking about? What wilderness? Going to the Mojave Desert, you know, something, Gobi Desert, Sahara, where she has a place prepared for by God, in which she is to be nourished for 1,260 days. Egypt. And here's it. Most everyone holds that is future. Future. So who is this woman? Okay, let's give you the two views. If you're going to hold that it's literal, that it's mostly literal, this is how it goes. You put all in that the woman is Israel because Jesus is the descendant, king of David. So if it's Israel and Jesus comes out of the Jewish hope of the Old Testament, then this woman who goes into the wilderness has to be Jewish. And so what you would say is that there's, at the end time, a miraculous preservation of a group of Jews in the end time. See? And again, this is how you would argue. The woman gives birth to a son. Obviously, you would argue the woman is Israel. The woman comes back later on. That's in the future. The woman is spared and prepared. So that you would say, if you held that in the end time, there will be great sort of a, there'll be Jews who are in refugees, but God would sort of protect them at the end time. Yes, David.
So the literal view doesn't literally interpret that word woman?
No. What it does is it takes its interpretation from this one, the verse first. And what I want to do is to give consistency of why they would hold. Now, it doesn't prove it because the book of the Revelation by itself doesn't really prove beyond a shadow of doubt what your view is. Okay? Now, let's take the other view. Let's say you don't hold that there's a hope of Israel. How do you take this? Okay. Bear with me. You would take the woman as not Israel. You would take the woman as representing the people of God. Whether they were Jews or whether they were Gentiles, they represent the people of God. Well, they would say because 12 could represent Israel, it can also represent the 12 apostles. It's a universal number. It's like WD-40. You could do it anything, you know, and whatever you want, you know. Just joking around, WD-40. But it's a good product, you know. It's a good. You could catch fish with it. People spray it on lures. They catch like fish. It's like crazy things, you know, with WD-40. So you would take, because if you held that it's not Israel, almost one of the presuppositions is that Israel never was limited to ethnicity, but it always had a bigger concept of people who follow God. It happened to be ethnicity, but the whole program of God was to enlarge it because even in the Old Testament, there was always Gentiles in Israel. God just accelerates the process in the New Testament. Okay, so again, if you hold that there's no hope for Israel, the woman with the 12 stars is not ethnic Israel. It is the people of God at large. Okay, now, you have to hold this. The reason why is because, again, once we get to this, if you want consistency, if woman is the people of God in general, then this promise in Revelation 12 about the woman isn't for specific ethnic Israel. It's the general people of God, and since you'd hold it as a more symbolic, this is a prophecy that within the generations of Christianity, there will always be Christians who are persecuted and would flee, and God would reveal his miraculous deliverance and sustaining in the midst of persecution. That is how you have to interpret. And you see how they're different. All on how you see the woman and the consistency between how this passage begins and how it concludes. You still have to be consistent And you can't say, oh, the first one was Jews and the second one's, you know, the church. No, no, that's like too much, you know. It's like you have to Jews, Jews. All believers, because the woman changes, you know. And so there you have it. And so it's like, how do you figure out which woman is? Again, it's how you're going to interpret other passages that are going to lead you in how you interpret Revelation 7. Okay, any other question? Well, I got 15 minutes more. We could talk for a long time. Any other question? Good, because we got a long time. Oh, oh yes. It could be, but I usually don't how they interpret it, because they interpret it that people who hold that the woman is the church, they don't even really want to talk about the rapture at all in the book of the Revelation. They don't want to talk about it. That's a dispensational word. They really don't want to talk about it.
It's not in Revelation?
No. If you hold that the woman is people of God and not Israel, you don't want to bring rapture to this. The rapture is not in here. There's a rule. They don't want it. They don't want rapture. Because here's the problem. If they're raptured before, then how come there's believers in during the tribulation? You see, if you hold that Christians go through the tribulation, there's no rapture before the tribulation. You see? There lies how you have to play it consistently. You play it consistently. And that's all that we're trying to do. Okay, let's move on because we don't have much time. If we have more time, we could talk more. We didn't even get to the passages outside of the Revelation, which is at the bulk of what we want to talk about. So we might have to continue this next week.
Yeah.
Okay, here it is. Zechariah 12, 1 to 11. Okay, you got to underline this. Okay, this one. I'm going to go through this really fast. Oracle of the word of the Lord concerning Israel. Okay, you want to know, this one is not visual. This one is verbal. Okay? So let's none of this visual stuff. Oh, I see a bunch of, you know, clouds with unicorns and, you know, none of this stuff, you know? The Lord declares, because this is in traditional prophetic power. The Lord puts words, declares. This is a power. Old Testament prophets were powerful. Okay. Thus declares the Lord, who stretched out the heavens and founded the earth and formed the spirit of man within him. Okay, this, you got to take that true. Okay, that's not metaphorical. Okay, it's true. Behold, I'm going to make Jerusalem a cup of staggering to all the surrounding peoples. The siege of Jerusalem will also be against Judah. On that day, I will make Jerusalem a heavy stone for all the peoples. All who lift it will surely hurt themselves, and all the nations of the earth will gather against it. On that day, declares the Lord, I will strike every horse with panic and its riders with madness, but for the sake of the house of Judah, I will keep my eyes open when I strike every horse of the people with blindness. Then the clans of Judah will say to themselves, the inhabitants of Jerusalem have strength through the Lord of hosts, their God. And on that day, I will make the clans of Judah like a blazing pot in the midst of wood, like a flaming torch among sheaves. And they shall devour to the right and to the left all the surrounding peoples, while Jerusalem shall be inhabited in its place in Jerusalem. And the Lord will give salvation to the tents of Judah first, and the glory of the house of David and the glory of the inhabitants of Jerusalem may not surpass that of Judah. On that day, the Lord will protect the inhabitants of Jerusalem so that the feeblest among them on that day shall be like David, and the house of David shall be like God, like the angel of the Lord going before them. On that day, I will seek to destroy all the nations that come against Jerusalem. And I will pour out on the house of David and the inhabitants of Jerusalem a spirit of grace and pleas for mercy, so that when they look on me, on whom they have pierced, like in Revelation 1:7, remember where I began? They shall mourn with him as one mourns for an only child, and weep bitterly over him as one who weeps over a firstborn. On that day, the mourning in Jerusalem will be as great as the mourning of Hadad-Rimmon in the plain of, last week, Megiddo. Okay, now here's the thing. This is not a vision. It's not apocalyptic. It's verbal. Okay, so it's on a different plane than the book of the Revelation. So, actually, because it's on a different plane, yeah, there's symbolism here, but it's, it tends to be more literal here. Okay, here's how it goes. If you hold, okay, first let's do it. This has never happened in history. This has never happened in history. There hasn't been a conversion of Jews in Jerusalem ever, okay, in the end time. This is just focusing on the end time, okay? Hasn't happened that the nation of this world is attacking Israel and surrounding Jerusalem, and then Jesus or the Messiah comes, delivers them, and you know, they all like start crying and wailing and mourning that, you know, deliverance come. Okay, so it's never happened. Okay, since it never happened, how do you take this prophecy? So we got to play it by the rules. If you are literal, like Jim, 70% literal, 30% symbolic, and he's even up because in my original slide was 65% literal. You're literal plus, Jim. You're going to take this, yeah. You're going to say the places that are mentioned and the situation exactly is how it's going to play out. So the nation's going to surround Jerusalem. And then there'll be a deliverance by God. And since they will look on the one who appears, it's actually the Messiah Jesus who will be delivering back in Jerusalem because it's literal, because it's never happened. Now, if you don't want a hope of Israel, this is where, and this is, in a way, you have to have an explanation because this prophecy is not apocalyptic and it is not symbolic in nature. This is how they would play it. With the coming of Christ, all prophecies like this that detailed a deliverance of an ethnic city and an ethnic people takes place now in all people because the people of God, Israel then, represents the people of God, everyone now. And so the Jerusalem being a cup of reeling, if you hold that there is no hope of Israel, the cup of reeling isn't that, you know, the Iraqis and the Iranians and the Saudis are surrounding Israel or the Jordanians, you know, whatever, the Hezbollah surrounding Israel. They'll say, oh, through the annals of Christian history, Christians have always been in persecution. And so every generation of Christianity, we have experienced the people of God being a cup of reeling. You see, you're not looking at specific literal, you're looking at symbolic metaphor. The problem is Zechariah 12 is not symbolic metaphor. Okay, just want to tell you that what's good in the book of Revelation about the symbolism, when you get into Old Testament prophecy, which tended to be something like this, more detailed, you got to deal with the passage like this. This is why, and I'm not saying I'm a fan of this person, but I'm an equal opportunity employer. John MacArthur, who happens to be 95% Reformed, what do you mean by 95% Reformed? John MacArthur would hold that Jesus Christ didn't die on the cross for the world, everybody. That John MacArthur would hold that Jesus Christ only died for the elect. That's a tell that you're pretty much Reformed. He believed in limited atonement. And he's pretty much Reformed across the line when it comes to salvation, but when it comes to Israel and the end time, he's not Reformed. And the reason is, and I've heard him say this, is because I hold to a literal hermeneutic, and it seems literal here. And so he holds to a future of Israel. Okay. And so you have passages, and one of the things, how do I do the rules? How do I figure out the rules? Obstacle one, and I'm not saying they're impossible to overcome. You have to deal with Old Testament prophecy that has not been fulfilled. You got to deal with it. And if you don't believe in a hope, you'd say it has been, and Jones said, used a phrase, and we're talking about replacement theology, that the church has replaced Israel. And that's basically how it goes. While if you're not replacement theology, using Jones' phrase, that is a very common theological description, you basically say, "Oh, I take this literal because it was understood literal, and it's not apocalyptic, so this is going to happen." So you hold that Jesus will actually come to Jerusalem; he's going to deliver a group of Jewish people under duress by this world, and in that, you know, there'll be around that time a huge amount of Jewish conversion. Okay, believe it or not, I'm on slide 29. I had 59 slides, so we have more next week. But yes, question. Oh, okay. Question was when I said not apocalyptic literature. Okay, last week we talked about what made the Book of the Revelation so hard. It has a lot of symbolism. As the speakers were preaching on it, it's a visual, first visual, and second, writing. Okay? And there are things, I'll write down what you see, and actually recording of actually words, but it's more of a visual thing. And also the apocalyptic, there's a high degree of figures that things may not mean exactly how it's explained. So that's apocalyptic, includes the book of the Revelation and the book of Daniel. Zechariah 12 is not apocalyptic. It's old school prophetic utterance, thus says the Lord stuff. It's a different beast. Okay, and so there's a difference between, and perhaps a difference of how you've seen it. One final question before you chow down on 70th anniversary food. Yes, I forgot your name again.
Oh, I'm Carolyn.
Hi, Carolyn. Because from last week, 60% of the book of Revelation has Old Testament imagery. It's almost uncanny. They're taking it from Isaiah. They're taking it from Daniel. They're taking it from Zechariah. 60%, more than majority, is taken from Old Testament imagery. This phrase, "shall look on the one whom pierced," well, that's a clear tell. That it is association because of certain phrases that will be used, taken directly from the Old Testament, and that's how it's played. Yeah, almost everyone agrees that it's huge amount of Old Testament. Maybe the one book that has even more Old Testament references is the Book of Hebrews. You know, but half of that is the Book of the Revelation. Okay, see you next week. Sorry we couldn't get through, but we will continue next week on this particular very important subject. Okay, take care. Have a good lunch.